From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on February 3rd, 2025, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, Senator Lindsey Graham talks about recent moves in cabinet confirmations out of Washington. State House reporters Mayon Schechter and Jeffrey Collins give us some insight on the first month of the legislative session and the governor's annual address. We also have a little econ pod for you.
Econ pod.
That's right, an economic update looking at interest rates, U.S. GDP, and our state's unemployment rate. A little snapshot. How about you give us a little snapshot by calling 803-563-7169. Yes, we are going to change the greeting. We will change the voicemail greeting. Maybe there's a lot of ups and downs. You know, it's like negotiating a trade agreement. It's give and take. So we're gonna get to that. But we need you to call us anyway and suffer through that little voicemail greeting and let us know what's going on in your world at 803-563-7169. It's getting warm out there.
Yes.
Getting warm out there, guys.
Yes.
Please let me know if this lands. 803-563-7169. Let's take a look at what's on tap this week in the State House. The House and Senate are in for week four and have several major meetings, including both House and Senate Judiciary Committees on Tuesday afternoon. And the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Finance Committees have subcommittee meetings dealing with state agencies as they look at budget requests as they begin that budget crafting process. On Wednesday morning, there will be a full Senate Medical Affairs Committee meeting and a House Education and Public Works meeting. And Thursday is a day for tort reform and liquor liability related legislation in both the Senate and House with subcommittee hearings. Where are my tort people at, huh?
Yeah, you're the man!
The governor, we're still looking and waiting for his schedule for this week. Up in Congress, they are in. And looking at the economic calendar, the January jobs report is out on Friday. We got some more econ news later in the show, so stay tuned. But little Sunday show wrap up. Of course, Senator Lindsey Graham was on Fox News Sunday talking about the latest movements out of Washington, and he announced that he will be a yes vote on Trump's cabinet picks, including Robert Kennedy Jr. for Department of Health and Human Services, Tulsi Gabbard for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, and Kash Patel for FBI Director. Here's Graham responding to Shannon Bream's question about Trump removing FBI agents tied to January 6 investigations and moving around management in the agency.
Well, number one, as to changing personnel at the FBI, I think that's a good place to start. How do you expect the FBI to change if you keep everybody in place? That's been part of the problem. I've been open about the January 6th pardons of people who committed violent acts against cops. I don't like it. But we're talking about the FBI. We're talking about people who looked the other way, were part of the problem, allowed the FBI to get warrants against an American citizen called Carter Page based on Russian disinformation called the Steele dossier. They lied to the court. So I'm looking forward to some of these people finding a new job. Now, if you're an agent working on a January 6th case or some other case and you were assigned to do it, and you know, you shouldn't be punished just for doing your job. But this idea of keeping everybody in place in the government after Trump won the election is insane. I think he should have the ability to put people in management positions that share his vision of how to move forward on the American First agenda. There's nothing unusual about that to me.
Okay, I want to ask you quickly about the tariffs. Mexico, Canada already saying they will issue full retaliatory tariffs in exchange. China's going to the World Trade Organization. Your colleague Senator Coons put out this statement when they became official yesterday. He says, you know, President Trump said he was going to drive down prices to make America more affordable. Then on day 13 of his presidency, quote, he imposed tariffs that will send prices skyrocketing. Is it a good move?
Well, I think it's 3,000 Americans die every 2 weeks from fentanyl poisoning coming across the Mexican border. They make the drugs, fentanyl, produce them in Mexico. Their precursors come from China. We've been overrun in terms of 11 million illegals coming across the Mexican border. If you want tariffs to go away, Mexico and China, stop poisoning Americans. Stop sending fentanyl into America to kill Americans. If you want to have a better relationship, Mexico with the United States, do your part on the other side of the border. To our friends in Canada, I really appreciate what you're doing on the northern border. I think these tariffs are designed to get these countries to change their behavior. I am glad that we're pushing back against China and Mexico when it comes to fentanyl poisoning of America. I am glad we're putting everybody on notice that the old way of doing business is over. There's been a 60% drop in illegal crossings in 10 days. So these tariffs, I think, are designed to bring about change. And if the change comes, I think the tariffs probably go away.
And you just heard Graham say there, if you're an agent working a January 6th case or some other case, you shouldn't be punished just for doing your job. Quote, that's a key statement there from him, who is the second senior member of the Senate Judiciary Committee that is getting lost in the shuffle there as there is reporting of agents being removed from their jobs and reprisal activity taking place right now. And a little full disclosure, I have family that works in the FBI. I couldn't exactly tell you what they do because they don't tell me what they do, but they do work to keep our country safe and protect, defend, and preserve the Constitution of the United States. So, a little something there. But sticking with Graham, there is a fascinating piece by Politico on how Graham is now back-channeling with House Freedom Caucus members as he works to inform and shape how the budget reconciliation process takes place in Congress. Remember, as we've discussed, Graham is pushing for a massive immigration reform package through his budget committee before tackling the tax cuts in the same way later this year. House Speaker Mike Johnson wants all of it in one massive bill, which could easily fall under its own weight, as things tend to do when you try and make everyone happy. So this is a little bit more of a palace intrigue story here, because if you guys know your political factions, you know the House Freedom Caucus, they are far right. They do not like to negotiate too much. It's always a hard no. Whereas you get Lindsey Graham, he's always been accused of being a Republican in a name only. And then here he is trying to make everyone happy, which is another characteristic of him. So we'll see how this works. But of course, this is his way of trying to get around House Speaker Mike Johnson and get some folks on his side for this showdown that's still taking place in Congress. Another showdown, but with some friends, some actual friends. And, you know, last week we reported on the governor's State of the State address, and after that concluded, I sat down with South Carolina Public Radio's Mayon Schechter and the Associated Press's Jeffrey Collins for their insight on that address and what they both thought of the first month of the legislative session. And just so you know, we're in the State House lobby during this taping, and there will be some bells ringing. It happens. We're on location.
I do think that you'll see most of what he wants, you know, in some way or shape or form, get passed. That's been kind of the tradition for the last several years.
Mm-hmm. And then, Mayon, kind of cutting to you and your takeaways from what the governor had to say tonight. That speech, almost an hour long, his second to last speech as well. What were your takeaways?
Very similar to Jeffrey's. A lot of the issues that he talked about are issues that he has talked about in his previous State of the State speeches, but also in his executive budget. Like Jeffrey mentioned, he talked about raising teacher pay, talked about money for land conservation. He also talked about putting an SRO, a school resource officer, in every single school, something that he has been beating the drum on time and time again, and has really become his own issue. He also talked about VC Summer a little bit. Look, there were a lot of things that he also did not mention that are issues that are facing the state. He didn't talk about the South Carolina Department of Juvenile Justice, which is a huge issue that budget writers, but also a lot of lawmakers, are trying to dive more into and trying to get a handle on. He did not talk about the $1.8 billion accounting error at all, which we have heard many times from the Treasurer Chris Loftus, but also state lawmakers, that this is not a bright spot for the state, but there was no mention of that. Of course, everything is good in South Carolina. Yeah. And I thought this was interesting. We did not hear really about any of those kind of controversial red meat social issues, nothing on abortion. Mm. We didn't hear anything about the transgender community, for example. And so I think that, you know, says a little bit of the fact that, look, he is not running for re-election and he's got, you know, a couple more years left. But I thought it was interesting that he left that off the table.
And since we are in the State House lobby, we get to have all the fun aspects of it, including the bells ringing for the House, because they're still in session right now, dealing with some rules packages, some politicking going on, if you will. Jeffrey, seems to be a little bit of some of those issues dealing with, like, the far right House Freedom Caucus, which, you know, obviously there's a supermajority in the House of Representatives, but there's a little bit of a back and forth when it comes to some things like rules, like different issues. But also interesting, like what Mayon was saying, that we didn't hear a lot of those big controversial issues in the governor's speech tonight.
No, and it's funny that you mentioned that. This rules package, they took it up about 2 o'clock. I think everybody figured it was going to be out of the way well before the 7 p.m. speech, and they're still going. So, and that's something that the governor did not mention, is there are factions right now in the Republican Party. There's a primary looming in, you know, an open governor's seat in 2026. And, you know, there's the, you know, his legacy will probably be, at least in some ways, up for that. I mean, you know, he will be asked to endorse somebody, and then there, and with most of the governor's races, when you have someone that's been a well-liked incumbent, everyone will be trying to glom onto him, or perhaps in some cases not. But, you know, it was very interesting that there wasn't that kind of red meat stuff, that it was more reflective, that he, you know, you mentioned again what South Carolina going to be like in 100 years, also reached back to the Revolutionary War, showed off the Walter Edgar History of South Carolina book that he takes everywhere these days. So it was very reflective.
And maybe the point of leaving that out was to, he talked about civility at the end, and maybe that was really the approach with this speech. You know, it's a brand new legislature in both the House and the Senate. Here's an opportunity for both Democrats and Republicans to get along. And as we both, all three of us know, McMaster has enjoyed a very good relationship with both political parties here in the legislature. So,
yeah, and we're also in that legacy building phase of his tenure, his reign, if we should say, since he's been so long serving. So you do want to maybe focus on the good and not so much the bad, because he did say during that speech that the state is in superior fiscal shape, which it is when we talk about revenue growth for the budget, when we talk about our rainy day reserves. We have plenty of money. Some would say too much money. We got to give it back and cut those taxes, like he's talking about reducing the income taxes to 6% from 6.2%. But that being said, there is that $1.8 billion accounting discrepancy that is playing out right now in the State House after we got that forensic audit back a couple weeks ago. So, Jeffrey, we were all in a subcommittee meeting, the House Ways and Means Subcommittee today, where the Treasurer, Curtis Loftus, testified and didn't exactly accept blame. He did say accept some blame for his office, but also know that other folks like the Comptroller General were mainly to blame for this discrepancy. Again, no money missing here, no criminal activity detected, but still a very big flaw on the state's books.
It's a matter of public trust is what it comes down to. I think both sides would tell you that. I think Curtis Loftus would say the problem is that the Senate's out to get him, and that, you know, he's the one that has that should be allowed. You know, he's speaking on behalf of his constituents and the public. On the other side of things, the matter of public trust that you might hear, especially from the Senate, but from a number of lawmakers, is that it took somebody, it took 6 or 7 years for them to report that this was a problem to lawmakers, and it wasn't any of the three people involved in it. It was the someone that took over after the Comptroller General resigned, the new Comptroller General, who ultimately brought it to their attention. So, you know, we'll see how this shakes out. I mean, there's calls for, especially from Senate leadership, for, you know, for Curtis Loftus, the Treasurer, to resign. I don't think the House is quite there yet, but I think we're going to have another month or two of trying to pull out all the threads on this and figure out exactly what happened and where the responsibility needs to lie.
Yeah, Mayon, it's on a separate track, it seems like, with everything else going on when it comes to priorities for this session. But we did hear from Democrat Senator Margie Bright Matthews, who gave that Democratic message, that response to the governor's State of the State, basically, you know, really hammering on the Treasurer and his responsibility, his role in all this, and even saying that this is going to estimated cost about $15 million when we're talking about that forensic audit. We're talking about legal fees, defense fees for the Treasurer. How do you see this playing out? You were also in that House Ways and Means Subcommittee hearing with the Treasurer there, too. It was very tense, but it was also very informative in some ways.
I mean, look, I think, again, echoing what Jeffrey has said and what you have said, the Senate and the House are on two different tracks right now. But it is clear that the Senate leadership, and maybe there's a few holdouts who aren't quite there on pushing the Treasurer to resign, but it's clear that Senator Larry Grooms, who's been really leading the Senate's investigation into that $1.8 billion error and the one previous, the $3.5 billion error, that he has the support of leadership when he's talking about asking for Treasurer Curtis Loftus to resign. Really, I think the big question mark is in the House right now. Of course, the House has a different kind of issue. They have so many more people, and they have so many freshmen, particularly Republican freshmen. Yeah. And so, and look, you know, the Senate has made the point that they've been on this issue for since last year. Whereas the House is really starting to learn more about what's been going on. So again, it's just been a bit slower in the House versus the Senate, but I think at some point there will be some middle ground. What that looks like, I mean, I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah, it could be pretty messy too when those tracks collide. And of course, well, we've heard the governor talk about this audit too. He hasn't called for anything to happen, but these recommendations outlined in that audit to be implemented.
And I do think that's where we will see the probably the quickest consensus is the recommendations. It does appear based on, of course, what we've heard in the Senate, but based on what we heard in the subcommittee today, that everybody agrees changes have to be made to every single office.
Jeffrey, another thing we heard in the governor's speech tonight was talking about energy generation in the state, this never-ending need for more. Some big users in the state, we're talking about data centers, we're talking about advanced manufacturing in our state. Scout Motors up in Blythewood needs more energy once it gets fully online. We're hearing more and more about that. We're hearing more and more about another boondoggle in our state, VC Summer. We keep hearing about folks trying to see if that nuclear site, the other two reactors that they were going to build, will eventually come back online. What do you take away from this when we keep hearing more about this need for energy and the movement on some of the legislation going through the State House right now dealing with it?
You're going to end up with an energy bill passed over here, but at the moment, the parameters of it are still unclear. The Senate is still holding, both the Senate and the House are still holding hearings, listening to testimony, getting information. I think that the consensus is that South Carolina needs more power. I think the consensus is that we need to build more generation for power. I think the consensus is going to end up being that, you know, there needs to be some trimming back of regulations so these power plants can get online a little bit quicker. But again, it's the details. And you mentioned VC Summer. You know, the thought is that you can get maybe an Amazon or a Microsoft that wants to have a big, you know, data farm to get that thing back up and running. Well, I say it was back up and running, get it running, period, you know, because it's just basically some shells that have been rained on for a long time. So the key to that, you know, so that's a part of all of this, too, that they're going to have to consider. And it's funny that VC Summer is back because, you know, there's a lot of optimistic talk about it, but ultimately, once I think that people really begin to see this as a possibility, there'll have to be some very frank discussions because there's a lot of people, especially in the Senate, that remember what all we went through
with
VC Summer.
We're still paying
for it, yeah. Well, and we'll still be paying for it a long, long, long time.
And then we saw Santee Cooper also putting out requests for proposals to see what they want to do with that site. So, I mean, it's very interesting to see that discussion come full circle. You know, it was just such a knockdown, drag-out fight when it came to what happened with that $9 billion boondoggle not even 10 years ago, right? I mean, so it's fascinating to see us kind of come full circle. But you've been covering the State House for a long time, Jeffrey, and I want to ask you just about how we've restarted executions in the state last year after a 12-year hiatus there because of lethal injection drugs were not being able to be obtained. We're taping this on Wednesday evening. It will air Friday evening. If things go the way they are planned currently, there will already have been the third execution since these have been restarted. You've covered these. You've been there. Can you tell us how these have been going so far and anything that's changed or is new or out of the ordinary with this process?
So this will, you know, the Friday night execution, that'll be the third execution of six inmates who have run out of appeals. They did allow a little holiday pause. There was a second execution was in November, and then they gave everybody a little bit of time over Christmas and New Year's, so we didn't have them every 5 weeks like they're scheduled. But after this one, we'll have one 5 weeks later, 5 weeks later, 5 weeks later. You know, South Carolina passed the SHIELD law that allows that allowed the state to be able to buy. Now we're just using one drug for a lethal injection. It also keeps the members of the execution team and their roles and everything secret as well. And so you get three choices. You can choose lethal injection, electric chair, or the new firing squad, which hasn't been used yet, was added a few years ago. But so far, every inmate's chosen lethal injection, including the one that's happening on Friday. And so, you know, it's been... while the protocol has changed to just one drug, you know, the executions have looked similar to the ones that I covered before the 13-year pause. There have been a lot of legal challenges, but none successful so far. And there's another one right now. The Marion Bowman, who's the next inmate to be executed, is saying that South Carolina needs to tell him more about the lethal injection drug. But that's also, you know, that's gone up to the Supreme Court. And right now, you know, it's been denied every step of the way and probably likely won't get that hearing and they're not going to stop that execution either.
And you heard Jeffrey there talking about the state execution of Marion Bowman last Friday, which occurred without incident at 6:27 p.m., again on January 31st. Next up, an economic update for a little Econ Pod. Of course, there's plenty of volatility in the markets right now as the geopolitical ramifications of President Donald Trump's tariffs on our biggest trading partners are playing out. In fact, they were originally set to go into effect on Tuesday, but that 25% tariff on goods coming from Mexico will be postponed at least a month, as the White House and Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum have reached a tentative deal that includes an additional 10,000 Mexican troops on their border. Citing the, quote, extraordinary threat posed by illegal aliens and drugs, including deadly fentanyl, constitutes a national emergency under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, quote, that is part of the executive order that Trump is using to impose tariffs without congressional approval. Now, Trump is also including a 25% tariff on Canadian goods and separately a 10% tariff on energy products like oil from Canada, as well as 10% tariffs on Chinese goods imported to the United States. As of our taping, those are still set to go into effect at midnight Tuesday. It's also unclear what benchmarks need to be met in order to lift these tariffs or the threat of them. But if they go into effect, expect to see prices increase as a result of retaliatory tariffs being put in place, something Canada has already said it will do. Give me a call. Let me know how your portfolio is looking, guys. I'd love to chat. Now, remember, a lot of major companies have located production lines to Mexico thanks to the stability of the renegotiated NAFTA agreement, or the USMCA, back in 2020. Now, last week, there was a slew of economic news, including Boeing's fourth quarter earnings. CNBC reports that the company lost $3.86 billion in the last 3 months of 2024, taking about $3 billion in charges in its commercial aircraft unit and its defense and space business. Revenue was down 31% from the same period last year to $15.2 billion. Now, Boeing's results were impacted, as expected, by a nearly two-month machinist strike that idled work on most of its aircraft and lengthened delivery delays to customers. Also, a little tidbit, American Airlines said over the weekend that it made further cuts to its schedule because of late deliveries of the new Boeing 787 Dreamliners, which it also planned to use to launch a premium seat-heavy configuration to capitalize on a consumer shift toward pricier, roomier seats. The lead says, invite us into first class. Send us a first-class ticket. Now, you guys know that those 787s are exclusively produced in North Charleston. That's why we talk about Boeing on this podcast from time to time. But Boeing hopes, they hope, hope and a prayer, by year end to be producing 7 787s monthly, up from 5 monthly, though the company continues dealing with shortages of critical parts and with challenges related to certifying seats. So a lot of things moving around. The tariffs, throw it in there, who knows? Next up, the Federal Open Market Committee last week opted against any changes to the Federal Reserve's benchmark rate, holding interest rates steady at around 4.3%. The U.S. economy grew 2.5% in 2024, according to the U.S. Commerce Department. That was slower than the 3.2% in 2023, but still a solid pace. GDP for the fourth quarter grew at a 2.3% rate, which was down from 3.1% in the third quarter. Consumer spending, which accounts for two-thirds of our economy, was up 4.2% from September through December. So I guess a lot of people did have a December to remember. You guys were spending. But businesses pulled back on investment for the first time in more than 3 years. The Fed expects the economy to grow by 2.1% this year, which would be down from the current 2.5% from last year. As for the South Carolina economy, we saw the unemployment rate slightly tick down by 0.1% in December to 4.7%. The Department of Employment and Workforce Director William Floyd said that the state ended last year by, quote, achieving the largest labor force in the state's history, a record number of people working, and a record number of jobs. More specifically, December's labor force was 2,536,654. That was an increase of more than 66,000 individuals year over year. Quote, and that was William Floyd over at Due. Now, where were the biggest job gains last month? We're talking construction, finance and insurance, and private education services. The losers? There's always a loser. Manufacturing and leisure and hospitality, as well as government jobs, saw some declines in December. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. A.T. Shire, producer of the Lead Podcast, is here with us, folks.
I'm here.
We have no special guests. It's just the two of us.
So we think. If you're here and you hear us, knock twice.
Oh my God.
They read the gavel. That just means they read the gavel.
Yeah, I think we scared Mayan off for a little bit, but I've been hearing from people. Some people are telling me we have to keep using the word boondoggle.
I agree. Boondoggle. I'm firmly in the boondoggle / hornswoggle.
Hornswoggle.
The team, even though hornswoggle different meaning. Well,
yeah,
it sounds the same, hits the ear the same.
I will say, I don't think I brought it up, but another reason why we do the boondog was because billion boondog, $1 billion boondog.
We're
you know, like,
but okay,
we are a hornswoggle. That
sounds
a
great.
Lot.
I like it. Hornswoggle
so easy on the ears.
Hornswoggle is more of a steal. You're stealing from them. Boondoggle is more of a bait and switch sort of deal.
Discrepancy. Yeah.
But we got a call, short and sweet, about this topic, and they've given us a new option. If
Ooh,
you're ready, Gavin.
Yes. Yeah,
this is what we like.
Love options.
We love options and solution oriented suggestions. So here we go.
Hey, AT and Gavin, just wanted to give you guys a supplement to Boondoggle. Consider Flim Flam. Thanks. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Oh, our Flim Flam caller. Thank you. What a great word, AT.
Mr. Flim Flam, thank you for calling. And thank you for saying AT before Gavin. But Flim Flam, I love Flim Flam. We're talking about liking alliteration. But much to my chagrin and the whole Hornswoggle community, where it doesn't really fit, it just sounds good. It's sort of there. It's not quite there. A first definition, nonsensical or insincere talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's sort of just like a bag of hot air,
mm-hmm.
mostly. But then your second, the verb... swindle.
Okay.
Swindle someone with a confidence game. Con, not so bad. So we're close
there. You could use that in a lot of different things. I know I love another word there like that has F in it.
Mm.
Kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle is... that just
a commotion or fuss, especially one caused by conflicting views.
A kerfuffle. Yeah, that sounds more like a row.
I think a...
a spat.
I think a boondoggle can definitely lead to a kerfuffle, obviously.
Yeah,
so.
Yes. Kerfuffles can become boondoggles.
Thanks to Flim Flam.
Boondoggles don't always become kerfuffles. So, Mr. Flim Flam, man, thank you for calling so much. You were definitely going to work on it.
We're going to work on it. We're going to work it in. We're going to work into some scripts.
The double G... that the longness of it, the double O, like boondoggle just hits so right.
It's also just been such a part of us for so many years that
it's an old friend.
And it was gone for a while because we didn't have many boondoggles.
We went
to talk
years,
about.
Hundreds of episodes
and
without
then,
talking about them. And we do it for three episodes, and Mayon Schechter
shows up,
storms into the office,
in.
Storms in, and yells at us.
I'm just going to say, I didn't want to say in front of her because I was so in just a state of shock,
yeah,
but I was so shocked.
Oh.
That she came in,
the gall.
And just demanding,
mm-hmm.
just
scary,
belligerent,
scary.
If I can use that word,
that's a great word.
I
like that word.
I played it cool. You probably heard it in my voice, but underneath, and AT could probably see my eyes.
If you really know Gavin, there's a tiny quiver.
It's the news cycle doing its thing, right? I don't control the when a boondoggle happens, guys.
No, but when you see a boondoggle, you know
you
it.
You say a boondoggle.
And you say it. You know?
And then people try to censor you.
These boons.
Get ahead and censor it. That's what it is.
These boons are made for doggling.
And that's just
what they will do. But Flim Flam is a strong one. We can see if we can work it into some future episodes. Gavin, he'll be reading eloquently. He'll be in his script, and I will be like,
in the background, I'm gonna have how to, can I get Flim Flam in
gonna
here?
I'm going to have you take that one again and try a Flim Flam.
You're saying that, I think Flim Flam could fit right here.
Yeah, so Mr. Flim Flam, I will try to get
Mr.
it in
Flim
for you.
Mr. Flim Flam.
Make it the best Flim I ever did Flam. Anyway.
Flotsam and Jetsam.
This is not good. This is bad radio. So Gavin, we are going to hit the outro. So we're going to say goodbye. It's a great podcast that we love that you listen. Please
call
in.
We love, guys. Yes, and we know how much you love a boondoggle. We see those numbers, and we're going to keep up with you. Don't worry. But until then, we want you to give us a shout, 803-563-7169. Tell us some of your favorite words.
Please.
They must be appropriate for air. But, of course, you can always leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, too. You can stay up to date with the latest news on SCTV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
If the joke doesn't land the first time, you say it again.
It's tried and true.
You say it again,
oh.
And it lands, okay?